I don't need to hear myself. Anyway, there we go. Sometimes I do like to hear the little echo in my head, because too often I'm talking to myself or singing to myself anyway. Oh, welcome to Thursday Night Talk. The little ditty you heard in the beginning was Brett Denon singing "The Holidays Are Here, and We're Still at War." Tonight we're going to be discussing a topic that is timely beyond belief today. Refugees. A refugee, generally speaking, is a displaced person who has been forced to cross national boundaries and cannot return home safely. Such a person may be called an asylum seeker until granted refugee status by the contracting state or the United Nations. They formally have to make a claim for asylum. Right now, we Americans know not where our country stands on refugees, especially from Arab lands or Muslim people. The pleading eyes of children, hurt and homeless because of the Syrian refugee crisis and civil war, cry out for help. Hundreds of thousands of them had been in harm's way in Aleppo and other parts of Syria. If you listen to Democracy Now! Today, you learn that at least one child dies in war-torn Yemen every 10 minutes. Women and children are the most vulnerable in wartime all around the world, including here in the USA. Children as victims are most heartfelt and tearful examples of violence, power, and control by terrorists, by other civilians, and by the very governments that underline corruption, intolerance, and death. We've also watched in the past few days the bombs continue in Aleppo, and the last thousands of people move away from known death to a place that is unknown. Where do refugees go for breath of life, for themselves, as well as their children? Tonight, my guests will share stories of war through the eyes of survival, refugee families, and humanitarian support. Andy Brackatz has been working as a volunteer at Syrian refugee camps in Alexandria, Greece. She's here to reach out for refugee support and holds a place of hope for them in her heart. Andy Sahic is a Bosnian Muslim genocide survivor from the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina. She's a community organizer and activist here in Arcata who emphasizes peace and community through film and art. So before we get to the trauma of war, loss, and dangerous journeys, can you please introduce yourself to our listeners, Annie?
My name is Annie Brackatz.
And where are you from, Annie?
I'm from Arcata. I've been here since 2001. And
yep, just anything else you want to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a woman of the world.
That's what I wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. Yes, you are. Mm-hmm. And Azra is
yours. My name is Azra Andy Sehik, and I'm a Bosnian genocide survivor. And I've been here in Arcata since 2008. My way of thinking of how to see the world and how to become peace, I work on myself mainly. But through that, I also engage community. And I'm a member of Women International League for Peace and Freedom, and also a creator of a true entertainment group that works with community here in Arcata.
And you and I met through the eyes of women, of which you've been a guest for me, one of the hosts of that show, a couple of times through the Humboldt branch of Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And maybe later we can talk about some events that are close to your heart as well. We will be talking about how to get in touch with organizations, because this is reaching out for not only compassion and understanding, but also for humanitarian support. So, Annie, why don't you begin with, how did you start on this journey, and what made you choose to be a volunteer?
Well, listening to NPR, since about 2013, I was first introduced to the Syrian crisis. And night after night, I would hear of the tragedies happening there. And months went by, and it's going on, and I felt, I've got to do something about this. I really I don't want to just send money or write letters. I want to share my love, my compassion. I want to go there and do some work in the world. And I had never volunteered for an organization before, so I was kind of slow to come around. And it was actually about 6 months I laid in bed at night thinking about it before I actually verbalized that to a friend that I wanted to go to Greece and work in a Syrian refugee camp. And immediately I got feedback back that two friends of mine, Lorraine Carolyn and Marcia Murphy, were over in Greece working in Athens. And I went, wow, really? You know, just these are my people, and they're over there. If they can do it, I can do it. So I was, it just immediately made me go, oh, yeah, I can do this. And I immediately got on Facebook with Lorraine while she was in Athens, and she told me about the work that she was doing. And I really my heart just absolutely was taken from that time on. And I never looked back. I just felt like I got to find my place and go do this. So Athens just did not resonate with me because it's a big city. And I'd been there before, and it was just didn't feel right to me. So I started searching on the internet. And first I went to the big organizations, the UNHCR, Doctors Without Borders, International Rescue Committee. And all these organizations wanted, of course, donations, financial donations, administrative help, or helping those who had gained asylum in the U.S. to integrate. But that was down in Oakland, or the bigger cities, and we're in Arcata, and this is my home, and so that wasn't going to work for me. So I kept looking, and eventually I found an organization called refugeesupport.eu, and go to their website and check them out. Immediately I resonated with this group. They are organized, productive, loving, and they're all about the dignity of the refugees. And they turned out to be absolutely much more than I imagined they would be. They were fabulous.
Now they do, it's an army-run camp there. In Alexandria is where you were at?
Yeah. I flew to... I realized I had the month of October with nothing on my calendar. So when Paul set up a Skype interview with me, I said, well, I can give you the whole month of October.
Wow.
And he said, okay, let's get your reservation at the Hotel Manthos, which is where all the refugees stay there in Alexandria. Which Alexandria is up by the Macedonia border, and it is by it is about an hour west of Thessaloniki. There's a lot of camps in Thessaloniki also, because when they closed the Macedonia border, a lot of Syrians that were actually either walking from Syria or they got just trapped there at the border. When they closed, I think it was May or June, they closed the border, they put up fences, and they started using rubber bullets. It was just horrific, and all these people were stuck there. So there's quite a few camps up around the border.
Now, a lot of people came across the border, walking across the border, as refugees often do, walking because they're... sometimes no transportation, but yeah. Your feet, and maybe you have shoes on. a harsh reality, but that's true. Yeah. Now, when coming across the border, were they taken from the nearest place to, how did the organization, did you find out how the organization splintered off into various parts of Greece?
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's still expanding, actually. The first refugees that came from the border ended up in some very congested camps in Thessaloniki. And I actually, once I got to Alexandria, I never left Alexandria until I flew home because there was so much work to do. So I really don't know a lot about those other camps. But the most of the refugees in Alexandria came from Lesbos. They had walked to Turkey, and they'd been in camps in Turkey for maybe a year or even 2 years before they managed to pay these human traffickers to get them to the water and in a boat, and if they were lucky enough to survive, to the island of Lesbos. Extremely traumatic for these people. They just then were scooped up in a very unorganized fashion because they just kept coming by the thousands. It's very overwhelming for a small island. And they were put into makeshift camps there in Lesbos, very overcrowded camps. And ultimately, they became so full that they started boating them to the mainland and then busing them to individual camps. And Alexandria was one of those camps where many of the people came from Lesbos, and they were, at full capacity, 800 people.
Wow. Which is minuscule when you look at, let's go back to 2011 in March, when the anti-regime uprising turned into a civil war. The United Nations estimates more than 400,000 people have been killed. And as of this month, 4.1 million Syrians have fled the country. 6.3 million people are displaced internally. That's a lot of people. And when you have 800 in the camp, that alone is so overwhelming. Like you said, you were there for a whole month, and there's so much work to do. What kind of preparation was necessary for you to do this, Annie?
Oh, it's so interesting because I actually had absolutely no background except love. I have this heart that is just has a lot of capacity. And but I thought, God, I went to a CPR class, actually, a CPR and first aid class at the fire department here in Arcata, which I encourage anyone who has not done this before to do it. I wish I'd done it before my children were born. I would have felt so much more confident in an emergency. And I actually didn't have any opportunity to use those skills, but I do encourage you all to do that. I reached out to Paul and asked him what I could bring that would be most beneficial. And he said, God, we could really use Arabic books, because it's very hard to get a hold of Arabic books here in Greece. So I went up to Tin Can Mailman, and there was 20 books on the shelf, and I looked at them and went, God, I have no idea what these say. I have no idea what these are. And so I called up to HSU, and they sent me over to the International Studies Department, and I asked if there was an Arabic speaker who could help me. And within 5 minutes, I got a call from Ahmed, and he was so fabulous. I would take a picture with my phone and send it off to him, and within 5 minutes, he would reply back what the title of the book was and if it was appropriate or not. And he helped me. Altogether, I accumulated 25 books. And so I brought books. I brought good wool socks, warm things. And I actually brought 2 fans and solar panels.
Great idea.
Yeah, my husband and I work in the solar industry. And at the time when I first started thinking about going, it was very hot, and the refugees were very hot. and fans would have been fabulous. Of course, by the time I got there, it was starting to get cold. But I brought two samples and spec sheets, one for the UNHCR and one for refugee support. So next summer, we'll be sending a fan and a solar panel for every family on the camp. And if we are lucky, we'll get the UNHCR to also take it's a great product and cheap.
Now you and David are doing this?
David Katz, he spec'd out the panels and he found a proper fan and got samples, and then we brought those samples with us, and they'll be great, and I imagine that we'll start doing that pretty soon, because it takes time to get containers of those over to.
So aside from refugeesupport.eu, where people can learn how to, if they choose to gift the agency itself, how about for the fans? Is there a contact for you? Are you looking for people so you can fund that more?
That's a good question.
You can get back to, you can think about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk here. And my guests are Annie Katz and Andy Sahick. And we're talking about refugee humanitarian support, peace, and community. Your comments, feelings, questions, concerns are welcome. You can call 826-4805. Our toll-free number is 800-640-5911. If you don't want to be on the air, you can text us at 492-5478. And Michael will read them on the air, and we welcome your calls. Andy Sahick, you have quite a tale, and I don't know where you might want to begin, but what do you want to share about your story tonight?
Well, being, you know, in a war-torn country, and I think the biggest thing was the capital of Bosnia is Sarajevo, and Sarajevo had, in 1984, Winter Olympic Games. So I think that tells you a lot what city is capable of doing. And fast forward, in 92, you have bombs and shelling and snipers. And so for me, I was a volunteer at the Olympic Games. It was the most fabulous time I think Sarajevo had.
It was beautiful.
It was just absolutely spectacular. And then in 92, when the war started, it's, you're first of all in disbelief. You don't know what's going on. And every little noise, it just is devastating. And, you know, but its capacity of human being is just amazing. And so a young person as I am, you know, who didn't care about politics or who's what, I had to learn really fast who are my friends, who are not my friends. I even learned, you know, the difference between the bombs and, you know, where is it coming from. And so it's a life experience that is really teaching you big lessons to learn. For me personally, I learned who I am and what I am, how strong I am, and that we don't need a whole lot of stuff in life. You know, I would shower with just 2 liters of water and have whatever food there is, because Sarajevo is, unfortunately, it's in a valley, so we are surrounded by mountains that had Winter Olympic Games, so we were basically sieged for, you know, 4 or 5 years there. I was lucky enough that I was able to get out sooner, so I was there only, I say only because most of my family lived through the whole war, but I was lucky enough that I got out. And it started basically in February, and I got out end of November. And I always say, when I tell my friends and family, you know, there's part of me that lived for those months of horrible situations. I missed death very many, many times. Bullets, grenades, you name it. I lost a lot of friends. And then there's a part of me that it was stuck on that journey, getting out of Sarajevo to first Croatia, and then I was a refugee at Czech Republic. So it's like, you know, war situation, then, you know, the journey to the land, to, you know, freedom. It was also a very scary time for all of us who were in that convoy. There's no winners in war. There's absolutely ridiculous to think that something can be done with war. There's no winners. Everybody loses. And I don't know what will happen that we do realize that. I was just there for a little time, you know, comparing to my friends and comparing to people in Syria and comparing to people in all over the world, Darfur, Palestine. I mean, you name it. There's so many wars happening in 21st century, and we're still dealing with barbaric way of dealing with governments and politicians and power to be. And it has to be some better answer to all the needs need to be met. I understand that, but we need to talk. We need to communicate in a better way, in understanding in so many aspects. Is it political arena, or is it as a community members? So there's a lot of stories of my own. There's a lot of stories that I was able to hear, because at one point in my life I was on the board of this Bosnian organization where I was able to interview lots of people. So the story, none of them are obviously pretty. I mean, it's just war is war. And it's also a lot of times what I've noticed in last few years, especially when you talk to people, majority of people think, oh, Syria is far away. Oh, Darfur is so far away. It's like, it's not happening here. So why bother? Or just to say, oh, it's complicated. And I believe it's not complicated. It's just we are not engaged enough, or we don't have a big heart to really come to say, hey, we're talking about people. It doesn't matter where they are from, or what color they are, or what religion they are. It's you know, it's basic needs that needs to be met, and compassion and love, and one of my things that I like to say is humanity before politics. It's like we need to get to that basic level, because in nowadays wars, it's civilians that suffer. It's women and children and men, and they're suffering. It's not the army. It's not the, you know, politicians or politicians' family. I believe that if they send their kids or, you know, the politicians, if they would send their kids into war, I think it would be a very different thing. But, you know, it's just numbers for them, you know, numbers here, numbers there. And it's really unfortunate to see that still it's happening. It's like, are we learning anything from any history, any wars, anything that's going on in the world? How can we not open our eyes and learn from lessons? So, but these are maybe the big questions. The bottom line is really to really connect heart to heart, and to connect our politicians to their heart, and to connect, instead of being, I feel that a lot of people in power are so disconnected with their hearts and their feelings and a true human that they are, that I think coming to that is the answer to, for the big change in this world.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Now, can I ask you how old you were when the war started?
Yeah, I was about 26.
Yeah. And how you waited 9 months before you started your process, before you could leave. What was that like?
Well, you know, it's like no food, no water, no power. And really, thanks to my family and community, it's, you know, I'm still here. It really, community does make a difference. And that's why even nowadays, I really emphasize on community events. That's why I'm an activist, because I feel that's where the strength is of any community. If we know each other, we can help each other. If we hear the story, because I believe every person has a story, amazing story. You don't have to be a refugee, or you don't have to be a genocide survivor to have a story. Every single person has a story. And so getting to know each other, you know, help me to survive those days, because when the power is cut and you don't have any water, you have to go and fetch water. You know, this is a, you know, it's a big city. It's not like I lived in a village and, you know, it's like something common. I had to go and get, 25 liters of water on my back, and how do I figure out how to carry it on uphill and stuff. I mean, it's like I had to learn skills, basically, how to survive, and how to make cakes without eggs, and how to, I mean, it's like stuff that you have to figure out. It's existence that pushes you to figure out. But again, you know, my friends and family that helped me through that, and it's really thanks to that, and just being able to sit and talk to people, because obviously we as civilians, we don't know what's going on, where is it coming from, what's going to happen, who's going to help us, you know. And honestly, back then we were, you know, thinking and pointing out, what's America going to do? When are they going to intervene? When is UN? What's happening? Because genocide was happening from day one, you know. So systematically, Muslims were being killed in villages. It was harder for bigger cities, for Serbian armies to come in and do a slaughter or whatever. But in smaller villages, in smaller cities, oh, yeah. I mean, it was happening from day one. And so it was hard in so many levels, you know, emotionally and physically. And, you know, when you don't have a lot of food, or it's just really, and then winter was coming, that was another thing. So you have to learn everything and anything, you know, how to cook bread on a little tiny stove made of, you know, some drums of oil cans or whatever. I mean, it's just, you really have to face that one day to next day. How do you survive the following day?
Well, I imagine part of what helped other people survive was you asking them for their stories. That connectedness that you said, that does come from a spirit of a big heart that wants to share that connectedness and learn from each other and support each other. Annie, what are some stories that you heard at the camps? Or your own stories of your heartfelt and spirit work while you were there?
Well, first of all, after the first day, I really didn't know exactly what I was getting into. Even as I arrived, I really didn't know what was going to happen the next day. And the first thing that I experienced was amazing volunteers. These hardworking, heartfelt, lovely people, self-funded volunteers, ages 18 to 67, just with open hearts and working hard and showing up every day, ready to do whatever needed to be done to serve the members of the camp. to serve their basic needs, their clothing, their food, the toiletries. And so the main work, that's the work that I was doing through refugee support, was distributing basic needs. One of the most rewarding jobs I had was refugee support had remodeled a community center for the refugees. And for 3 days a week, 3 hours at a time, the women had the space all to themselves. And from the time I got there till the time I left, I would go 3 days a week. And it was so rewarding. The women just had a chance to relax, to drink tea, to smoke cigarettes, to take off their headscarves, to sew, to do makeup and hair, and
little things that we take for granted.
Yeah, I mean, they would just light up when they were in there. Their music would be blaring, and they would be dancing, and it was so lovely to see these people who's, you know, had just been torn from their homes, and that's so much tragedy. Many of the women had no husbands. Many of the fathers had no wives. They were taking care of children on their own, and it was tough. It was really tough in the camp. But this was a time when they were able to relax. I was able to massage the women and just massage their hands and their shoulders and watch the layers just peel off. The children were also that was amazing, heartfelt experience with the children. A refugee support donor put together a playground, beautiful equipment, and for an hour every morning we'd go and push the kids on the swings. And these little kids would go from angels to demons in a second flat. And it was absolutely shocking, these kids. You really were trying to protect them from each other. But in these most precious moments, when I'd walk up to a child whose fists were just bound and their eyes were just searching, you know, who can I beat up? I'm so angry, I'm so mad. And you know, here we are just pushing kids on the swings, and he's standing in line just looking like he's just about to really cut loose on somebody. And I could just go up to those kids, and I'd play this gentle game on their back. It was just this little rhyme in this game with gentle touch, and their hands would just melt. Their bodies would just melt in front of me. So the gentle touch and the least bit of caring just made these kids melt. And that was so rewarding to me, to be able to hug these kids and just feel them just melt in my arms. It was very rewarding.
That sense of humanity.
Mm. Yeah.
You're listening to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. I'm Brenda Starr, your host this evening, and my guests are Annie Katz, who's sharing her experiences at a Syrian refugee camp in Greece, and Andy Sahik, who's sharing her experience in life as a Muslim genocide survivor from the war in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Together, they live in Arcata, and they didn't know each other until tonight.
That's right.
We're discussing refugee humanitarian support, peace, and community. Please, your comments, feelings, and questions are of concern to us, too. 826-4805, you can call us at. Toll free, 800-640-5911. You can text us at 492-5478, and Michael will read them on the air. Speaking of texting, social media has... when you were in Sarajevo, there was no social media.
No.
You were without that. And here we are, how many years later, and where would people be? I wonder if the touching that humanitarian part. If there's so much of that because of social media, that we know more now and we know more what to do or how to help, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, we didn't have really any of this whatsoever. Zero. In 92, there was nothing like this. Phones were cut off early on, and we couldn't call anyone, even in the town, not to mention somewhere far away. I had to find a connection because I had family out of Bosnia that I would have to, like, really coordinate, so they let me speak for a minute or two somewhere. So, no, I mean, it's a different time. And, you know, as much as now there's so much media coverage, I don't know, actually media, but, you know, like, certain outlets there is that we can hear and see what's going on in the world, and I think it is beneficial and helpful for sure. From Standing Rock, you know, there's so many things that happen, and we would know if there wasn't any media like what is now. And I'm also for Syria, that a lot of people are able to say what's going on. Also, I have some friends in Yemen as well, so they can tell us also that way what's happening there. And so, yeah, it is different times, for sure.
A little less isolationist, a little less.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Not that, you know, when you're in a position, whether you can even feel that or not. But
you're absolutely right, Brenda, because that was also another devastating thing in Bosnia, because we thought, you know, no one cares. Mm-hmm. And being also a refugee, I felt that way too, because there was not a lot of organization that would come and help us as a refugees. And I was in this camps that with kids and young kids and their moms. So we also felt that, you know, no one cares about us because no one is coming and visiting us. There was few people that came, and then some of them did not say what they're going to do. So it came to maybe two organizations that they would follow what they said they're going to do for our camp. So you're right on that. Absolutely.
We have a caller on the line, Sierra from Eureka. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And what would you like to say?
Oh, hi. Anne and I have corresponded already, but I also went to Greece, and I was there earlier in the year, even before the refugee camps were formed, and I just wanted to call in and talk about my experience and then touch on what you were just talking about with the social media connection with it, because I would say probably the majority of the people that are going to volunteer with the refugee crisis in Greece is because of social media. I know that I am a product of that. I watched it last year, and had I not had social media at my hands, I wouldn't have searched out all these great organizations and connected to them and stuff. And my aid has carried on through this whole year. I've stayed connected and made even like stronger connections through following groups on social media. So I think it's been a key part to supporting refugees in this crisis, in this time, but then at the same time, it's tragic what's happening right now in Syria, and we're watching it in real time, and then nothing's happening. So It can be great and not great.
So where's your heart from all of this, since we're speaking of our hearts?
My heart is pretty deeply embedded in this crisis at this point. I was really moved to go to Greece last year when all the refugees were coming in. I went with a group called Carry the Future and helped fit baby carriers for refugees in January when the borders were still open and people were coming through it. I've always wanted to kind of live a life of service, and this year has really solidified that and pushed me forward. And I would encourage, if people want to get involved, there are so many organizations, and especially right now with the winter coming in Greece, there's a lot of organizations that I'm seeing that are like shifting their focus to housing refugees in apartments and hotels, and I'm one of those people, and I reached out, like I connected with refugees directly through an organization called the Refugee Buddy Network, And I've been in contact with them for months. I'm following them with support. I'm helping support them. It's empowering them to get the aid that they need. They're out of the camp finally. So I just, my heart is so in it. And I just have formed such a relationship with these people. And they're so wonderful and so grateful for all the help. And like what you were just saying earlier, where people feel that they're forgotten, like the social media tool and being able to connect to people and let them know that there are people that care about them around the world is really important psychologically and emotionally for these people. So, and it's fulfilling my heart too on my end. So I would encourage people to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sierra.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for wanting a life of service. That's a hard one. It really is. And sometimes you get into that later in your life. Sometimes you're just there right from the beginning. And it doesn't matter. I always have this phrase. It doesn't matter how long it takes you to get there, as long as you get there.
Yeah. And I kept feeling like this is not just a news story. This is not just a European crisis. This is a world and a humanitarian crisis. Here in California, in our lovely, precious bubble, it's so far from our reality. But it didn't feel that way for me. It doesn't feel that way for me now, and it will never feel that way for me again.
Speaking of feeling, Andy, you come from so far away. You've been through so much. How does it feel now that you're here, when you look back, when there's a constant bombardment, as we've talked about? There's been wars ever since our memories. But now, so far?
Well, you know, it's ongoing journey. It's ongoing journey to learn to live in a world that still has war. I mean, that to me, it's absolutely not something that I can ever, ever comprehend, that we still have in 21st century any kind of war. It's very barbaric. It's very outdated. It's something that I, you know, obviously, you know, when you've gone through some big trauma like that, it changes you forever. So anything that I do, it's related to that experience or experiences. So there is, for all of us here, a huge lesson to learn. And being here in beautiful Humboldt, or in anywhere on this planet, it's the heart what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's really something that we need to wake up. If all of these things scenes, and not just in Syria, not just in, you know, all the other places that's happening, even in our country here, if all of these things are not waking us up, I don't know what else will. And if we don't engage, and if we are not an active participant in this life, which life are we going to be participating? So the feelings are very mixed. But one thing that I know, like Annie said, I have a big heart, and I doing as much as I possibly can to engage community and to live in a life that I want to see everyone in peace and love in beautiful world that we have here, and to really cherish our community and communities of the world, and just coming together as a human race. That's all we need. I mean, really. We live in such a world, and again, there's so many beauties in this world too. Today's topic is this, but I believe that there's a lot more good people. There's a lot more goodness in this world. There's so many. Look at you, Annie. You came from Little Arcata. to Greece to help these strangers. I mean, that's huge. That's humongous. And I really appreciate that. I mean, we need a lot of Annies, you know. And I believe there's all, we are all somewhere down like you. Mm-hmm. You know, we're really, if we touch, if something pulls you, and obviously this did, it's just, I think you would never change this experience. I mean, it's something that I'm sure you will cherish and your family will cherish. Mm-hmm. So it's really, we need to start extending our heart and our hands and helping each other. Because maybe, you know, with True Entertainment Group, for example, you know, we make these different art projects to bring community together and stuff. And on one of the big movie thing that I did years ago, people were asking, how did you do this? It was like 250 people showed up back then in Minor Theater. And it was like an amazing movie was put up, and it was community coming together because it was something interesting to see. Mm-hmm. But it's, that's one aspect. But having community, it was more than the move the screen was showing. It's being surrounded with so many people. It made it so special, and that's why I said reach out and. You know, capitalism really does make us as much more individualized that we need to be. And I always say we are tribe people. We are meant to live together. We are meant to survive together as a tribe, as a humankind. And so that's why I always emphasize on community. You know, it doesn't matter what how big the community is. If you are able to connect with each other, it's like everything else it can be so much easier. And if we think that we can live on our own, there's no way. I would not be here alive if I thought I can be as an individual. And not just in Bosnia, even, you know, being far away from my birth country, you know, all my family's over there. Thanks to my maid family here in Ikeda that I'm able to survive and have a healthy life. So it's community. It's really reaching out, helping each other. And let's just not be afraid of that, not be afraid of helping each other, opening your heart and saying, I want to help you. I'm here for you. What can I do? How can I help your life? How can I enrich your life? Mm-hmm.
We have another caller. Excuse me. Carolyn from Arcata. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. And thanks for putting on this program. It's been really great. So I have a question, a sort of a follow-up to just the large, the meta concepts that people have been talking about. I want to know, sort of on the ground, nitty-gritty, what's it like to do this volunteer work that Annie did? I mean, where did she sleep? I mean, what did you eat? What was your day like? You know, and what would it be like to be a volunteer doing what you did?
Thank you for asking. In Camp Alexandria, it was actually a breeze because we stayed at a hotel that was 15 minutes walk to this government camp. And the woman who ran the hotel was just like a big mama to all us volunteers. So we had it really pretty sweet. Everyone paid their own way. And I had my own room, but there were a lot of volunteers that slept two and three to a room. In the morning, we'd wake up and go down to breakfast, which was provided with the hotel room. And then at 9 o'clock, we'd have a meeting where we would discuss what we did the day before, if there was anything we needed to bring up, something we wanted to change, or something that didn't feel quite right, or we needed help with something, or needed more supplies. And then we all got our work for the day. It's an amazing organization because you have anywhere from 6 to 12 volunteers on any given day, always coming and going. New volunteers who had to be completely retrained, and we ran a free shop. We had an Excel spreadsheet where people would members of the camp came in with their card, with their identification number, and that would allow them to receive food. At that time, we were just giving them each the same amount of food. Now they've actually got it to a point system, which is really nice because it's more like walking into a shop and just grocery shopping. It's all about the dignity that Refugee Support really wants to bring dignity to these people's lives. We'd either work in the shop or the boutique, which was to provide clothing. We'd work in the warehouse processing donations that came mostly from Europe, lots of clothes, diapers, threw away lots of clothes. Because a lot of stuff came that was crap, and the dignity aspect of the clothing was so beautiful. Paul told us, if you wouldn't give it to your mother-in-law, don't put it into distribution. Because these people, these are the only clothes they have. You know, this is the only set of clothes. You don't want to give them something that's dirty or it's missing buttons. So we really did serious processing of clothes. And actually, I just want to throw this in there too, that the Greek economy is so bad that a lot of the clothes that we wouldn't give to the refugees, we put in free boxes out front. Those boxes were gone every day. We also played with the kids in the playground. I worked with women in the women's hour. We one day a week we cleaned everything top to bottom. We were constantly restocking. Right now there's an additional facility that Refugee Support put together, a communal kitchen, and the refugees will be doing the cooking and distributing to the refugees. So that's something new that came on since I was there. But Carolyn, you could go and do it too. It's awesome work. And like I said, people were there. They were like 18 to 67, every age. And there was, we can all do it. It's just a matter of wanting to show up and serve these people who so deserve it. Their gratitude is palatable. Every little thing you did for them, they were so grateful. And Refugee Support, who worked in conjunction with, they would have meetings every day with the International Rescue Committee and the UNHCR. And they said, you know, what can we do that you guys are not doing? How can we best serve this camp? And by constantly keeping up to date on what are the needs of this new group. Like, I just got on the Refugee Support website, and there's a new 150 people coming into the camp. So what do we do? You know, how can we best serve these people? So it's going to be ongoing and changing. But I would say never question whether you could be helpful there, or that you would come back with it being one of the most rewarding experiences I've had in my life.
Well, one of the things that you are doing, Annie Katz, artist, speaking of your heart, so I'm looking at a card right now that there's the earth is a heart, and surrounded by golden light and sun and comets in the night. And it's a holidays card. Tell us a little bit about this.
I paint a holiday card every year, and this year I printed out half of them to give to my friends, and the other half I made as in lieu of a gift I've donated, and then there's a line and a dollar sign. In your honor to Refugee Support, a committed group of volunteers currently supporting Syrian and Afghan families in official refugee camps at Alexandria and Philippiada, Greece, providing essentials, toiletries, clothing, and home comforts to maintain their dignity, well-being, better nutrition, care, and psychosocial activities to improve their health, cooperation with on-site agencies to give them options. So this year, I think, I know my own daughters and many people I know are, rather than getting a new comforter or a new hat, they're opting to have money given to an organization in their name.
How would somebody do that?
Well, oh goodness, how do they get my cards? You gotta find me. My phone number is 616-5245. And if you'd want to call me to get a number of these cards, I would be most happy to go and find you and bring them to you. Again, that number is 616-5245. I've actually, this community has been extremely generous. I've gotten thousands of dollars through this community. People want to help. They want to hear about this. That's why I'm on the radio.
Well, as Andy said, we need a lot of Annies.
Yes.
We need a lot of Annies, and we need a lot of Andys too. The affirmation, positive outlook, and how the global shift in thinking you're so dedicated to, it just comes from your heart and obviously from your experiences to help yes. others with that. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us a little bit before we leave of how people might be able to get in contact with you or some things that you're doing?
Well, if you would like to join Women International League for Peace and Freedom, you can contact me at 840-6067 or help build a community with True Entertainment. You can call me as well, and any art project that can bring community together, that'll be great. And just to say, peace is a verb. We have to work on it mm-hmm. every day.
Every day. Well, every day is a new day. And if we can just look at that one moment of what we have in gratitude, it does open our heart for others and mm-hmm. helps bring dignity to people's lives. I want to thank you so much for being my guest this evening and for the dignity that you bring other people in their lives. Mm-hmm. Before I leave, you're listening to a little bit more of Brett Denon, and the holidays are here and we're still at war. I do want to thank my guests, Annie Katz and Andy Sahick, for being here this evening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael, our callers, and you, the listener. In 2 weeks, all of the Thursday Night Talk hosts will be here for an end-of-the-year discussion. Please tune into that show. Until then, peace, Frog.
For the less fortunate, prisoners and soldiers you never have met, understand what it is they're fighting for. Say a prayer for your enemies. Say a prayer for the victims and their families. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Yes, the holidays are here and we're still at war.
You have been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thank you very much to our host Brenda Starr and our guests Annie Katz and Andy Sahick. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email Thursday Night Talk at khsu.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Coming up next week on Thursday Night Talk, have you made your list of New Year's resolutions and checked them twice? For many people, it can be difficult to make lasting change. Next on Thursday Night Talk, Linda Stansberry interviews a life coach, a weight management coach, and a CrossFit enthusiast about making big lifestyle changes fast, making big lifestyle changes last. That's December 22nd, beginning at 7. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Stay tuned to KHSU. No Room for Squares, coming up next. It's 8 o'clock.
On December 18th, Sister Soul will be presenting the last edition of Sister's Place after more than 36 years of presenting the best in R&B, soul, and doo-wop. For her last show, she'd love to hear from those of us that have been listening for so many years So by calling 826-6089, you can help us celebrate with a message of appreciation to be included on the last edition of Sister's Place on December 18th.
Support for KHSU comes from Wildberries Marketplace, locally owned and proud to carry hundreds of products made by our neighbors right here in Humboldt County. Wildberries Marketplace, keeping it local, a supermarket of choice, top of the hill, G Street in Arcata. The next time you visit one of KHSU's underwriters, please let them know that you appreciate their contribution. KHSU business supporters collectively give